By Dr. Baoshan Xing on nanoparticles, engineered nanoparticles.
For what you could do, arrows.
Okay. And then.
Good morning again. The relevance of this talk, you see the first word, adsorption. Hopefully some mechanism concept will be also applicable to availability. So that's a brief outline of the talk, introduction dealing with the carbon nanotubes. Then I have a whole bunch of isotherm and isotherm fittings. Then I introduced briefly a Dubinian Ashkatov model to fit the isotherms. Then we try to correlate some of those parameters with property of nanotube or fullerenes and the chemical properties. Then I'm going to quickly summarize on the challenges and the problems with those processes. We have three types of carbon nanomaterials. You know, in this picture, they showed you that fullerene type of nanoparticles, you can have carbon 60, 70, 80. Then for tubular structure, you have single-walled nanotubes and multi-walled nanotubes. So for single-walled nanotubes, basically you have your graphene sheet, you roll it up, that's your single-walled nanotubes. Why we want to talk about carbon nanotubes? You talk about applications. I'm not going to go into all the details, all the way from catalyst support to biomedical yield, drug deliveries. Now you talk about in situ sensors using carbon nanotubes. Quite a bit of productions. In 2009, reached $3.6 billion alone in electronics, not other applications. Why do you want to talk about sorption on nanotubes? People proposed probably a good solvent, potential solvent, to remove contaminant from water. Couple of reviews. Then you may use this material for solid state extraction. I recently reviewed a paper. They tried to use nanotubes put into the columns for chromatography techniques for chemical separations. Theoretically, you have a huge surface area for fullerenes and nanotubes, but in reality, you know, when you try to determine surface area, often the surface area is getting to a few hundred, simply due to the aggregation between those nanotubes. They are highly hydrophobic, they like to get together, but if you try to separate them out, then the surface area increases tremendously. Like any other nanoparticles, those carbon nanotubes, fullerenes, they can be toxic. It can cause cell irradiation response. Definitely can get into animal cells. Some people propose they can directly pierce through a cell. For plant cell, that's a different issue because we do have cell walls. Again, I'm reviewing a paper right now. For some reason, the nanotubes really get upticked, not only the roots, but also into the leaves, and also accumulate preferentially along the periphery of the leaves. I asked a couple of plant physiologists. Nobody knows exactly how the nanotubes, they're pretty long, up to 3-5 micrometers, but of course, diameter about 50 nanometers. So long is 3-5 micrometers, diameter 50 nanometers. Again, much bigger than the power of cell walls. How do they get in there? That's really a topic. A lot of people look into it. They talk to microbes, rats, human cells. Potentially, they may have some environmental impact. If carbon nanotubes or fullerenes absorb dissolved organic matter, or surfactant organic molecules, they may be suspended. That has been demonstrated in the literature. If you put carbon nanotubes in water, aqueous phase, they settle down right away. They're very hydrophobic. They like to bundle together, then settle down. But once you put some dissolve organic matter and some surfactants, you see the cloud suspension so dark, they stay there for years. So we try that, we spin them down, some fractions came down to the bottom, others stay there really for a couple of years. We still have that suspension, they're still very stable. If you have contaminants, this hydrophobic surface, you can imagine some contaminants, hydrophobic contaminants can get on those surfaces. You may increase the toxicity, toxicity of nanotubes plus the contaminant. But if those nanotubes cannot take up by organisms, you may reduce the availability or toxicity of contaminants because they cannot get into a system. For example, absorbed on the surface, you have microbes. Probably the microbes do not have access to the molecules on the surface. Similarly, with probably charcoals, biochars. So if you want to really know the effective application, environmental application of nanotubes, we've got to know the solvent properties. Then we have a couple of questions. What's the mechanism for organic contaminant absorption by nanotubes or fullerenes? There are quite a bit of literature report of those mechanisms. I'm not spend too much time on those mechanisms. We have so much combination of organic contaminants and nanotubes. If you try to do all the experiments, that'd be difficult. Hopefully, someone will have some predictive model. Try to estimate absorptions. So that's, we're trying to do it, but we're not there yet. You have many absorption models, but for absorption on nanotubes, basically, a planet theory-based model often have a much better fit than other models. One of the reasons is nanotubes, more or less, if you may call the hard carbon, minimum amorphous carbon, so they don't have much of partition phase, more or less all absorptions. So that's why these other models do not quite fit the absorption data. Let's give you some examples. That's 5 chemicals absorption on 1 nanotubes. You can see that if the truly linear model, that's the yellow line, that's friendly isotherm, log-log scale, of course linear. You see the two curved isotherm. Again, I have to emphasize, this is a log-log plot. Friendly model would not capture that curve. We've got quite a few other nanotubes on fenanthrene. So again, you see the curvatures. For fullerene, carbon 60, absorption on the right-hand axis, it's much smaller than nanotubes. We did a couple of endocrine disrupting chemicals. It's estradiol, benzophenyl A. Again, you see this curved isotherm, even at the log-log plot. Friendly isotherm would not capture that curvature in log-log plot. Quite a few chemicals, phenols, anilines, and their substitute counterpart. You see, most isotherm have this curvature captured by the planet theory-based model, but not friendly isotherm models. More isotherms, in this case, the bisolute system, you have pairing alone, then with competitor of naphthalene, phenanthrene. In some case, the friendly isotherm do give you a nice fit. Many other cases, friendly model failed to predict the curvature in log-log plot. This is a planet theory-based model. It's a Dubinian Atkinson model. Basically, we do not have that molecular volume here because many molecules, we do not have that parameter. So you can lump a A-term and that molecular weight, molecular volume parameter into this E term. So if you look at this equation, if this B term is equal to 1, that's your frantic model. So no wonder, you know, in some cases, frantic model captured the S term. If this whole term, this E term equal to 5.7, that's your linear S term. So then over here, you have a slope as a 1, and then you have a concentration term. So we're going to zoom into those parameters. This sorption capacity, that's a volume based sorption capacity. That's sorption, that's few chemicals and surface area. You see, sorption capacity, it's a function of surface area. That's common sense, right? But the problem is, each chemical, they have their own collision curve. We try to find some kind of normalizing parameter to collapse the curves, but right now we haven't found that parameter yet. If you try to, you have so many chemicals, then use the surface area, so many correlations, it's very difficult to predict absorption capacity. So we're still looking for what's that normalizing parameter, hopefully it will collapse. Then we have this energy term, that the E term. We see some correlation with the hydrogen bond donating ability, and also there's a pi bond parameter, the polarizability parameter. Then if those parameters are zero, they end up with the hydrophobic effect. So that's a term very close to 5.7 I gave you earlier. So this 5.5, you know, have the big error term, you know, if you don't have any hydrogen bond, if non-polar chemicals, basically will be hydrophobic effect right here. Then the B term and the two energy term, we have some kind of relationship, but we don't know what that really means. But if you have, suppose we have one parameter, we can predict other parameters. Then you can plug into those Dubinian Aschenbach model, then try to predict absorption isotherms. This is a purely mathematical manipulation, but I just want to show you, if you change your parameter, how that will affect the isotherm. We try to fix the sorption capacity. B term is 1. That's indication friendly model will fit your isotherm. If you increase the energy term, you can see the low relatively concentration, you have a lot more absorption site. Those sites will be highly energetic. If you talk about the soil, applications, those sites probably give you a low bioavailability or bioaccessibility because those are energetic term. If you increase the B term, that gives you curvature, even log-log plot. You see the curvature here? But again, the increase in E term, the energetic site, you have a lot more energetic site. If you try to fix the E term and the capacity, you increase the B term for some reason. Again, it's a mathematical manipulation. You have more site for the energy with intermediate energy site, not the high energy site right here. So that also relates to bioaccessibility. If you talk about, you know, relationship between sorption and availability. So I'm going to quickly go through some of the capacity term and affinity term with the property of nanotubes and chemicals. I showed you that before. This data from Bill Ball's group in Johns Hopkins. If you try to oxidize nanotubes, you cannot oxidize too much. If you oxidize too much, they break up. They're no longer nanotubes. You can see the surface function concentration, then sorption capacity decrease. So you have a more functional groups, you absorb more water on the surface. That occupy available space, so that you have this linear decrease sorption capacity and oxygen content on the surface. They did not specify those oxygen groups as hydrox groups or carbox groups. I think those functional groups will make difference because their ability to absorb water. That's our early data. It's a B term. It's a ratio between mesopore volume and micropore volume. Somehow it have a positive relationship. We don't know what type of mechanism, but if I show you the data earlier, probably mesopore, that's the have the absorption energy or intermediate energy, not that, like the very high energetic site, low concentration. So that's probably related to the intermediate absorption energy. Then we absorb this relatively big surfactant. You can see with the surfactant coverage increase, absorption capacity decrease. That's understandable because the competition between the molecules and surfactant. Then this B term, close to 1. Then the energy term also decrease, or pretty much constant. So what we are thinking, you have a layer of surfactant on the nanotubes. You instead have absorption processes, probably have partition in those other micelle. So that isotherm tend to lot of linear, more linear than the pure nanotube surface. We did not observe any capacity term with this B term, but there are relationship between the E and the B because both are energy terms. We come back to the property of chemicals. We do have the energy term as a function of hydrogen donating ability for chemicals, and also chemicals plausibility, that's a pi bond, but we didn't observe any property relationship with the molecular volume and hydrogen accepting abilities. So that's again only one nanotube. That's a nanotube with a diameter of 15 nanometers. If you have different functionalized carbon nanotubes, the relationship probably will change. Overall, in the literature, they see adopt non-polar aliphatics be smaller than non-polar aromatics and natural aromatics. This one most likely due to the strength of pi interaction strength. Now I'm reviewing a paper. They use density function theory. They actually calculate the percentage of pi-pi interactions, more or less anything from 25 to 30% to overall absorption contributions if you have a pi-pi interaction there. And that's depending on the substitution on bending rings, you have this relationship. I showed one this already. I'm going to move on. If you have an ionizable compound, you have neutral molecules, you have charged chemicals. If you know the both sorption coefficient, you can know their pKa or pKb, then you can calculate. So that's the model, that's the data, that fits really nicely. So as long as you know the pKa or pKb value, then the sorption coefficient for individual species, you can predict the sorptions. So absorption behavior of those organic molecules on carbon nanotubes or fullerenes, at least, you know, for our data, can explain a fit by the planar theory based model. We have three parameters. It's more than we would like to, but in the other model, they have four or five parameters. Still would not have better fit than planar theory based models. The Q term give you absorption capacity. Probably if you talk about environmental application of those carbon nanotubes, you do need to know this term. If you talk about how easy or readily dissolve, probably we need to know the energy term, B and E term. Now, what's the problem with those planar theory models? We have no way to predict dissolving hysteresis. Right now, we cannot find any parameter. How do you predict dissolving hysteresis? That's just a paper we published a few years ago, that fullerene, that if you have sorption, you shake, dissolving, you shake, Eventually, the spherical filament, the change configurations, you may end up those financial molecules trapped inside, almost like Joe mentioned earlier, those trapping rearrangement of organic molecules. So we don't find a way to predict, you know, the hysteresis, you know, how you predict those different thermodynamic pathways, absorption, desorption, they have different thermodynamic pathways. We have a hysteresis for organic chemical with the functional groups. There may be some cooling the bond between those endocrine disrupting chemicals and functionalized carbonyl tubes. We don't know how to predict that either. So for that carbon nanotubes, we have those parameters. Hopefully, someone or us in the future, we can include some covalent bond interactions, electrostatic interaction for ionic compounds. But right now, you can see we have so many correlations in empirical equations. Right now, we have a hard time to condense them into a more or less one equation, including both property of chemicals and the nanotubes. With that, I conclude my talk. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Lars. We got some time for questions. Let's start with here.
Yes, Mark.
At the high point of those isotherms on carbon nanotubes, do you know how the dispersion itself changes with loading of the chemical?
For example, like pyrene, phenanthrene, they did not affect the colloidal stability of nanotubes. But when you use a surfactant, the one we used, I showed you earlier, and the organic matter, I'm sure you did some of those work, even few ppm, we talk about, let's say, 2 ppm, dissolved organic carbon base, 5 ppm, they are able to suspend nanotubes, but not those polyaromatic hydrocarbons.
Did you measure the crystal spacings within the carbon nanotubes? They do two things.
Mm-hmm.
They either coat the surface and create a depth dispersion, or they penetrate the nanotubes, and they actually pull apart the spacings a little bit and create a different type of environment. And whatever environment that is, that also stabilizes.
That's possible. And we did some analysis for multiple nanotubes, like 5 layers, 10 layers, in collaboration with computational chemist. At least they told me that interlayer space between the layers is so small, most molecules would not be able to get in there. And I was also told the nitrogen as the molecule, as the surface area probe molecules, will not even get in there. It will be too small. But when we talk about bundles, your question, we definitely applicable. You know, if you can see by your eyes, your naked eyes, those nanotubes, they're supposed to be so small that they are not in nanoscale. Quite often, you know, 5 of them, 10 of them bundled together, they may probably separate, you know, like 2, 3. Nanotubes, so that probably will happen. You know, if you add enough contaminant, concentration is higher, you may separate a bundle into a smaller bundle or probably individual nanotubes. But
so you're saying both the size and the number density part did not change as you loaded the material, but just measured one of those parameters?
That's how we did. You know, we centrifuged, we did everything, we settled down for a certain time, and then we centrifuged. Then we do the DOC analysis of the supernatant, that accrued the procedure to do, you know, if any carbon there. It's more or less insignificant. So that's why when we say, you know, did not change much of those density, the structures. Yeah.
We might take the
I was asking the internal space and the external space, the energy could be different.
Mm-hmm.
But you just
the between the layers, between the layers. You mean in the wall?
Inside.
Yeah. Again, that's my question too. Thank you, brother. Marshall. I was told you always have some kind of catalyst there. That meant how you purify your nanotubes. Some catalyst, metal catalyst, will stay somewhere in there. Molecules will not go in there. It's blocked. If purely open, probably you're right.
But we've shown that X-ray scattering, it does get
in. Oh, that's good. That's a good point.
The thing does expand by at least half an
inch. Okay, that's good to know.
The molecular models, they're always in
the work. Okay.
Okay, let's take that question.
I have a small question about the isosome occasion. To my understanding, this occasion is calibrated by the previously existing data. My question is,
that's what we're trying to do. Not there yet. Not there yet. We try to collect all the parameters and hopefully get one equation and predict the one for the future. Thank you.